Welcome back to Analyzing Trends. Today, we're exploring a shift that's quietly but powerfully reshaping how organizations think about innovation, the language they use to define it. Now, I know language can sound like an abstract starting point, but the words we choose in organizations do more than describe roles. They assign power, set boundaries, and determine who gets to shape the future. Recently, Elon Musk made a move at xAI that illustrates this perfectly. In a post that made the rounds online, he wrote, "This false nomenclature of researcher and engineer, which is a thinly masked way of describing a two-tier engineering system, is being deleted from xAI today. There are only engineers. Researcher is a relic term from academia." At first glance, it might seem like just another Musk moment. Blunt, provocative, maybe even performative. But what he's doing here isn't just rebranding roles, it's redefining the language of legitimacy. When you delete a term like researcher, you're not just eliminating a job title, you're erasing a narrative position, the one responsible for asking why, for slowing things down, for introducing friction that might feel inconvenient, but is often essential. This isn't just about job titles, it's about authority, about who gets to produce knowledge and who gets to define what counts as innovation. In academic research circles, there's a framework that helps explain this shift: Mode 1 and Mode 2, knowledge production. Mode 1 refers to traditional discipline-based research, think isolated labs, peer-reviewed journals, and a focus on objective truth from a distance. It's the image of the detached expert, lab coats, clipboards, working in controlled environments. Mode 2, by contrast, is embedded, applied, and socially accountable. It recognizes that knowledge is produced not in isolation, but in real-world contexts, by people who are part of the systems they're studying. The Mode 2 researcher is reflexive, collaborative, and engaged. They're not just asking questions, they're shaping outcomes while also being shaped by the process. So when an organization like xAI removes the word researcher from its vocabulary, it's not just flattening the org chart, it's flattening the idea of inquiry itself. And here's the kicker: when you push those voices out, they don't disappear. They re-enter the system as critique, as resistance. Suddenly asking why doesn't sound like curiosity, it sounds like dissent. I mean, think about it. How often do we actually stop and examine the vocabularies of our own industries? What terms have quietly disappeared from your workplace? And what roles, what kinds of thinking vanished with them? It's subtle, but it's powerful. Now let's shift gears a bit and talk about who actually owns innovation inside organizations. It's a deceptively simple question, because while most companies have innovation frameworks and org charts, the real power dynamics are often far murkier. You'll sometimes hear about models like those from InnoLead. They defined 8 different structures for leading innovation. Some rely on a chief innovation officer, or CTO, others on cross-functional steering groups. They look solid on paper, but in practice, none of them are silver bullets. And that's because innovation isn't just about structure, it's about narrative authority. To get underneath that, I want to bring in the work of Gina O'Connor and her colleagues, who've done extensive research on how radical innovation actually takes root, or fails to, inside complex organizations. Their work identifies not just one innovation champion, but an entire system of roles: venture leaders, ambassadors, Sherpas, and portfolio managers. These aren't just operational roles, they carry symbolic weight. They shape how innovation is interpreted, resourced, and politically defended. And here's the critical insight from their research. Innovation consistently stalls not because companies lack ideas, but because they fail to develop formal systems that extend beyond a few creative individuals. It's not just about who's in charge, it's about who gets to tell the story of the future inside the organization and who's empowered to make it real. That brings us to how companies actually structure innovation ownership on the ground. One of the most common models is a top management team, or a subset of the C-suite, sharing governance duties. It sounds collaborative, but even that's not a magic fix. Then there's the CEO-driven model, think Steve Jobs at Apple, where the message is loud and clear. Innovation is a top priority, and it comes from the top. You also see more experimental setups, groups of loosely organized innovation champions, or companies that appoint a dedicated chief innovation officer. And then there's the idealistic model, the one where everyone owns innovation, and it's supposedly embedded in the company's DNA. That sounds inclusive, but without structure and narrative clarity, it often leads to diffusion. Everyone owns it, until no one really does. What's interesting is that survey data consistently shows satisfaction is highest when there's clarity, either a strong CTO leading the charge or a well-run cross-functional steering group with real authority. But even then, structure only gets you so far. Because culture always trumps structure. You can have the cleanest org chart in the world with innovation mapped out in neat little boxes. But if the culture resists uncertainty, if risk is punished, or if narrative control is overly centralized, nothing moves. And that's where the everyone owns it model often falls apart. It sounds democratic, but in practice it can mean no one feels truly responsible. Innovation becomes ambient noise instead of deliberate action. Which brings us to a core problem in innovation strategy: accountability. When everyone is supposed to own innovation, the reality is that no one truly does. According to PwC's Global Innovation Benchmark, one of the top reasons innovation fails inside organizations is unclear leadership and ownership, trailing only behind budget constraints and misaligned strategy, and the effects are measurable. The report notes that when innovation efforts fall short, the most common outcome is that no one takes responsibility. Projects get quietly shelved, lessons go undocumented, and the cycle repeats. That's not just a leadership gap, it's a structural flaw. Without clear ownership, even the most promising ideas get lost in ambiguity. I've seen this dynamic play out repeatedly in the context of AI development. There's often an abundance of talent, vision, and technical capability, but without clear ownership, it turns into chaos. Everyone's excited to contribute, but when decisions need to be made about direction, ethics, deployment, or long-term impact, no one steps forward with authority. The result? Fragmented strategies, overlapping initiatives, and missed opportunities. And over time, that ambiguity erodes confidence. Teams hesitate, leaders pull back investment, not because the innovation isn't promising, but because no one wants to be left holding the bag when things get complicated. So, while it's tempting to say innovation belongs to everyone, without clear lines of accountability, it often belongs to no one. And that's a recipe for stagnation. But let's dig deeper beneath the org charts and job titles into the symbolic layer of innovation. Every organization has rituals, symbols, and roles that give meaning to what they do. When you remove a role like researcher, you're not just changing a word. You're destabilizing a whole set of design rituals and meaning-making processes. Culture mapping is one way to make these invisible layers visible. It helps us see how meaning travels across systems, how established traits like policy and identity interact with emergent traits like ritual and symbol. When those emergent traits are ignored, systems become brittle. They might move fast, but they lose the ability to adapt, to reflect, to make sense of what they're building. I mean, what organizational rituals or roles have quietly disappeared in your workplace? Maybe it's the Friday demo or the open critique session, or even just the language people use to describe their work. When those go, something essential goes with them. As we discussed in a previous episode about shibboleths and brand language, these symbols and rituals aren't just window dressing. They're the glue that holds culture together. Lose them, and you risk losing your sense of direction. Now here's a twist. Friction isn't failure. In fact, it's where systems learn. We've come to treat friction as something to be eliminated, move fast, break things, right? But friction is where different groups negotiate meaning, where creative solutions emerge. The social construction of technology folks call this interpretive flexibility. Different groups see the same artifact in different ways, and that tension is where knowledge happens. Take Apollo 13. That mission didn't succeed because everything went according to plan. It succeeded because the system allowed for dissent, improvisation, and iteration. On the flip side, look at the USS McCain incident, a warship with highly flexible digital controls that ended up confusing its own crew. The interface was optimized for functionality, but it left no room for improvisation or intuition. When you eliminate interpretive tension, you risk intellectual blindness. Speed without reflection is just running in the dark. So next time you hit a bit of organizational friction, maybe don't rush to smooth it over. That's where the real learning happens. This brings us to Marshall McLuhan, whose work on technological environments offers a critical lens for understanding today's AI landscape. One of his most revealing observations was this: we become what we behold. We shape our tools, and thereafter our tools shape us. That recursive loop is central to what's happening now. As organizations prioritize engineering over inquiry, output over interpretation, they're not just streamlining process, they're shaping the internal culture of how innovation is understood. Remove the symbolic and narrative roles, the researchers, the ethicists, the interpreters, and what remains is infrastructure without reflection. You get systems that reinforce themselves, scaling faster than they can be understood. McLuhan's point wasn't simply that technology changes how we communicate, it was that every new system rewires our perceptual habits, often before we've developed the language, or the roles, to question what we're becoming. In AI, that means building tools that shape cognition, identity, and power without preserving space to examine those shifts in real time. McLuhan also warned that as technology advances, it can dislocate us from context, turning individuals into what he called discarnate data. In other words, we become signals in a system stripped of place, narrative, and meaning. That's precisely what happens when organizations eliminate the roles that provide interpretive depth, the ones responsible for translating technical systems into cultural understanding. Without those roles, systems appear neutral but are anything but. They carry forward embedded ideologies, assumptions about efficiency, hierarchy, control, without ever naming them. The result is a kind of procedural clarity that masks cultural blindness. Decisions get automated, scaled, and optimized, but the deeper questions about identity, power, ethics are left unasked. And over time, that absence becomes the ideology itself. So, as we design systems that can scale, let's not forget to design for meaning, for interpretation, for ethics. Otherwise, we're just building faster toward a future we don't understand. So, who gets to define the next wave of innovation? Is it the executives, the engineers, the users, or the invisible narratives that shape our beliefs? The real challenge isn't just organizational, it's cultural. We need to reintegrate inquiry and reflective roles, not as a department, but as a function of how we build and think. I want to leave you with this. We don't just build technologies, we build belief structures. And belief, like any architecture, starts with language. The stories, roles, and rituals we choose to keep, or quietly erase, shape the technologies and futures we create. So take a look around your own systems. What roles are missing? What stories aren't being told? Because the future isn't just something we inherit. It's something we narrate together. That's it for today's episode of Analyzing Trends. If this sparked something for you, please share it or start a conversation, or just take a moment to notice the invisible architecture around you. We'll be back soon, digging even deeper into the trends shaping our world.